You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. This podcast is called More Food with Less Resources, and it's part of our AgriTech series. I'm joined by Jonathan Webb, founder and CEO of AppHarvest. Hello, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Hello. Thank you for having me. Doing well here.
Great pleasure. Let's start off with just the elevator pitch for AppHarvest. What is it? What are your big ambitions? And why is it different to what's out there?
Yeah, so we are a U.S.-based company in central Appalachia, and we are building some of America's largest controlled environment agriculture facilities utilizing nature first and then layering technology on top in order to grow fruits and vegetables with 90% less water and get about 30 times the yield per acre compared to open field agriculture.
And what drew you into doing this? What was your trajectory?
Yeah, so I'm from Kentucky, a state in the U.S. that is known for coal mining, one of the largest coal producing states in the U.S. And I grew up here and I spent about 10 years in New York and D.C. And I was a part of building some of the largest wind and solar projects in the U.S. So my background was in energy. And being from Kentucky, I've seen the transition in energy in the U.S. firsthand, where we've seen a vast majority of the coal companies go through bankruptcy, and solar and wind, which was a boutique industry in the U.S. about 20 years ago, is now really a household industry and major operating assets all across every state. So my background coming from energy over to agriculture, my background is large-scale sustainable project development, building solar projects and energy, and now moving over to build large controlled environment ag facilities and agriculture. And it's that transition we've seen in the U.S. and energy over the last 20 years that really is, I think, our vantage point at AppHarvest is giving us a pretty unique lens on how we're looking at ag. And our viewpoint is the U.S. is going to see rapid change as it relates to agriculture. We're going to have infrastructure and technology come onto farms and really update our farming across the U.S. We've got the largest agriculture economy in the world. We have a lot of land and a lot of water, but we're not using our land and water very efficiently. And with these controlled ag facilities, we're going to be able to get far more production without the chemical pesticides, use far less land and use far less water. So it's something that, you know, our viewpoint is really looking at it from a sustainable lens on how can we ensure that we have food production over the next 10, 20, 30 years with climate disruption taking place and every other driver that's going on at a macro level. Now is kind of the time in the U.S. that I think we're going to see quite a bit of these build-outs happen over the next 5 to 10 years.
And when we're talking about controlled growing environments, I mean, basically we're talking about the you know, inputs and outputs. We're talking about energy and resources, which effectively is your background. And that translates into cost and impact, I guess, or impact on the environment, certainly. So you seem to be pretty well placed to dive in with this. Would you say, well, I mean, we would call them large greenhouses. Is that fair to say that your massive controlled growing environments are huge greenhouses?
Yeah, it's, you know, it even me being fairly new to agriculture, greenhouse can be a confusing term depending on how you use it or who you talk to. So, you know, we've tried to use controlled environment ag because if you look at a greenhouse, especially in North America, a greenhouse in Mexico could be a plastic hoop house with a dirt floor, no lighting and very little technology. But that's still called a greenhouse, and the grocers in the U.S. would still refer to that as greenhouse production. Versus if you look at what we're doing, I've tried to equate it to like a race car, right? So think of like a sports car in 1950, and then think of like a 2021 Ferrari. It's, you know, they're both cars, but one car is obviously going to perform at a much different level than what the other car would. So with us, it's, you know, we want to utilize technology and build with the latest and greatest tech to align with nature, use nature first. So yes, we're building in a glass structure, so a greenhouse, because it allows us to use sunlight first. And then we're using LED lights on top of that, and we're just adding the additional micromolar light to the plant that it's not getting through the sun. And then we're collecting all of our rainwater on the roof, putting it in a large retention pond, about 75 Olympic-sized swimming pools is the size of our pond. And so we're able to run the facility completely on recycled rainwater. We're able to utilize the sunlight. Then we add in the technology on top of that. So we're trying to, again, our position is use nature first and then add the technology on top in order to optimize for the plant and give the plant all the nutrients it needs in order to fruit at its maximum yield.
And now, is the value that AppHarvest offers, is it in a large structure? Is it in the use of the technology, the application of the knowledge or the processes involved? What's the bit that really makes it different?
Great question. We get it all the time. So we consider ourselves an applied technology company. So we're using proven technologies that are at the cutting edge, and we're combining that into an overall system that we can make sure we're at the forefront of the latest and greatest of what's available today. As far as we're an execution at scale play. So I think in the clean tech world, where we've run into a lot of problems, and we did in energy, is that every scientist in the world is working on a moonshot that is going to save planet Earth and come up with some new great technologies that relates to energy. We found out that didn't really end up happening. And then it just became an execution at scale play with, let's just build a lot of wind and solar. Like we know wind and solar technologies work. Hopefully somebody comes up with some moonshot on how we can better generate power and better, more efficiently use energy. But for right now, it's execution at play. Let's just build as much wind and solar as possible.
Yeah.
Agriculture is entering into that same realm right now. And the conversations in agriculture remind me of the conversations in energy in the late 90s, where in energy, it was, we're going to run a world without fossil fuels, cars will run without oil, power plants will run without coal. And now in my lifetime, that's very possible that we'll see that happen. As it relates to agriculture, you look at the UN reports. We had the UN Security Council visit Kentucky for our first time in state history. And we were able to brief them on what we're doing here. If you look at the UN reports, there's UN officials saying we have about 60 years left of topsoil on planet Earth before we degrade our soils to a point to where they're not usable. We need 70% more food by 2050. And I was at Berkeley, spoke at E.O. Wilson's Half Earth Summit last year. Folks at Berkeley are predicting we would need two planet Earths to have enough land and fresh water to grow 70% more food the way we're currently growing it today. So agriculture is at a press. We are at a dire point right now that is not being talked about in the mainstream at all. You know, investors are not talking about it. Politicians are not talking about it. People in the food industry are not talking about it. But if we thought energy was this massive problem on the horizon, it seems that agriculture is even exponentially greater of a problem than that, which is, how are we going to feed 9 billion people in a rising middle class by 2050? I mean, this is less than 30 years from now. That's going to happen in all of our lifetime. And oh, by the way, we have climate disruption, which is already creating massive problems for farmers around the world. So to get there, it's pretty simple. We have to use infrastructure, we have to use technology, and we've got to grow in controlled environments. So I go back to the conversations in agriculture today remind me of those energy conversations in the 90s, where we're going to get to a point where all fruit and vegetable production at scale globally at some point is going to be grown in a controlled environment, because we have to use 90% less water. We have to get 20, 30 times more yield per acre, and we got to get the harsh chemicals out of food production. So it really, to me, the place in which agriculture is at today, it's very similar to, again, the energy conversations of 20 years ago. And I think if we look at agriculture 20 years from now, it's going to be a much different landscape.
Yeah. Now, this is an interesting area that's been pushed by the Dutch for ages. We have some pretty large greenhouses in the UK. Generally, they're Dutch owned as well, to be honest. But I'm interested in how consumers view the idea of technology and food, because I think a lot of consumers are very romantic in their concept of food, and they like the idea of, you know, of technology not being part of what they eat. Now, do you think that that consumers don't particularly enjoy that? There's more of a back to nature drive that's at odds with your approach. You know, do traditional farmers see your approach to growing food as a threat? And does that matter?
Well, it absolutely does matter. I don't know that it matters in the sense of us actually selling our product. But we can talk about that in a moment, but for us, the four-season farmer, the organic farmer that's treating our soils properly, it is a priority that we make sure they get on store shelves. That is 100%, that needs to be for everybody, that we make sure we do not displace the good production that's made available through farmers that are treating our soils and waters properly. With that being said, the current place we're at in food production and where we have to go in the next 20 to 30 years, we are going to use and abuse our planet, our soil, and our water if we have to do everything outside. So we see controlled environment ag or technology related agriculture as nothing more than a complement to good agriculture. And what we're really focused on is the 90% of dirty agriculture that is using chemical pesticides three times a week that you can use once a year in the U.S. or using illegal labor practices. That's the agriculture that has got to go. So the big dirty agriculture that is polluting our waters, our soils, and using illegal labor, that's got to go. The good farming that farmers are working so tirelessly to produce great organic products globally, we all need to prop that up. And so, again, our viewpoint would be the more controlled environment production we can put in place will free up land and water to not put as much pressure on our planet. So that way, farmers who are growing outdoors have more land, have more water, and can grow a good organic fruit or vegetable. That's great. Yeah. And then for us, how much can we bring indoors to free up the land and water? And we think it's a very good complement. And to your point, from a consumer, it depends on where you're at. I mean, I spent time in New York and I was in Manhattan. And yes, if you go to a fine dining restaurant in Brooklyn, then, you know, some hipsters in Brooklyn are going to be keenly aware of where their food's coming from. Unfortunately, in the U.S., you know, if you talk to Walmart, half of Walmart's customers, you know, can be at or below the poverty line. So I grew up in a family where I went to public schools. I have a wonderful family, but parents with high school degrees. You know, we never had the conversation around where our food was coming from. My father and mother were just worried about getting food and making sure we had a, you know, a lunch box to take to school and had a good dinner at night. Yeah. The average American, what we need to do here in the U.S. is make sure affordable, good quality chemical-free produce is available to every American, and that's really not the case right now. If you hear in the U.S., you'll hear people say, you know, Whole Foods, or they'll refer to it as Whole Paycheck. I mean, the fact that fruits and vegetables are exponentially more expensive than a dollar meal at a fast food restaurant is a huge problem. And we've somehow got to make good, healthy fruits and vegetables affordable to every American. So to your point of the Back to Nature group that would be concerned about our product, unfortunately, in the U.S., that's just a really small segment of the consumer market. And what we're trying to solve for at App Harvest is we're trying to get really good quality fruit and vegetables at an affordable price that can be made available to every American. Hopefully the people in Brooklyn and D.C. and Detroit or Nashville, hopefully they're buying our tomatoes at a fine dining restaurant as well. But we're more concerned about the everyday American that's going to the grocery store and stocking up their store kitchen shelves.
Yeah. Okay, let's have a little chat about the nuts and bolts of what you're doing. Are we talking high-value crops? Are we talking salads and cucumbers, peppers, things like that? Or does it extend all the way through to carrots and potatoes? What are you growing?
So we will be growing specialty crops, and I think for the next 10 years, that's probably going to keep us plenty busy. We're focused on tomatoes as our number one crop, and that's because tomatoes are now the number one import from Mexico to the U.S. Mm-hmm. Roughly 4 billion pounds of tomatoes were imported from Mexico into the U.S. last year. And if you look at that, we're trucking tomatoes 6, 7, 8 days on a semi-truck before it gets to the grocery store shelf. And I think for a consumer in Europe, you know, how shocked they would be that in America, we really are. This is how we're trucking fruits and vegetables 2,000 miles. I mean, it is a jar. You got to think when you're in Washington, D.C., and I would buy lettuce, I'm not buying lettuce. I'm buying gasoline with a little bit of lettuce.
Yeah.
And so it's where the food system in the U.S., we have a long way to go. But that challenges the opportunity for us to be able to rebuild our food system and really bring regional production back to many parts of the U.S. and get fruits and vegetables much closer to market. So tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, leafy greens, berries, that's what we'll be growing for the next 5 or 10 years at App Harvest.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as part of the food supply chain, Is an organization like yours benefiting from the potential disruption of COVID-19? The fact that you can supply, that you're removed from other issues that might affect people, that, and certainly the farmers being affected by climate change and things like that. Is your removal of the variables from that part of why App Harvest has done so well so far to attract investors?
Well, it's just the place we're moving into the world, which our team had this fundamental, it was a very much a part of our founding, which is we need secure, reliable, clean supply of food production globally. We don't need it just in the U.S. And unfortunately, COVID has, exposed that our food supply in the U.S. is incredibly vulnerable. I was with our governor here in Kentucky. In about an hour after this call, I have a call with our governor to kind of update them on what we're doing. Our governor was very concerned about the reliability of our food supply getting on grocery shelves when COVID was first kicking up. And to be, you know, the largest agriculture economy in the world, to be the largest economy in the world, and to be worried about whether or not our store shelves were going to be stocked with food is just unacceptable. And we have got to build more redundancy, resiliency into our food supply. We have got to have food that's available year round, and we just got to take it into our own hands. So yes, before COVID, there was a lot of interest in what we were doing because of food safety. So look at all the E. coli outbreaks and various other foodborne illnesses that have been taking place in the U.S. So food safety, there's also risk in supply getting the trucks back and forth across the border from Mexico into the U.S. But then now with COVID, the alarm bells just went off. And I think many investors and many political figures here in the U.S. understand, you know, the desperate need to rebuild our food system in the U.S. And have a more long-term sustainable supply.
I'm assuming, and I don't know if I'm being sort of simplistic here, but I'm assuming that controlled growing environments like the ones that you're running are much more robust and immune to things like climate change and supply chain issues. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to solve for, that no matter what the climate conditions are outside of our facility, we're able to grow a good fruit or vegetable year round. And so one of our early investors, Jeff Ubben, became an investor in AppHarvest because he had found out one of the largest open field tomato farmers in California was going to no longer be growing tomatoes. And that is because of climate disruption. So if you look at where food is grown in the U.S. or for the U.S., it's in areas that are running out of water. California, running out of water. New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, running out of water. Mexico has struggled with water. And these are areas that grow our fruits and vegetables for the U.S. So to be able to use less water, to be able to have a climate-controlled facility, to be able to have the highest levels of food safety, grocers and consumers are demanding products like this. And so I think we'll see a lot more models like AppHarvest roll out here in the U.S. in the years to come.
Yeah. Now, why? Just one final question for you, really, but it's quite a broad one, I'd say. What is your ambition for AppHarvest? So, if you'd raised $1 billion, sorry, for the next phase, what would you do with it? Would you just grow a bigger, build a bigger greenhouse, stroke controlled growing environment? I mean, are the economies of scale endless, or are there different avenues to go down?
Well, great question. And again, for right now, our complete focus, we want to build the largest indoor sustainable produce hub in America, and we want to put it in Central Appalachia. If your listeners look at Moorhead, Kentucky, zoom in on Google and look at that, we can get to about 70% of the U.S. population in a one-day drive. So when I said earlier that Mexico and California are trucking vegetables 7-8 days on a semi-truck, from Central Appalachia, we can get to New York, D.C., Boston, down to Atlanta, over to St. Louis. We can get to 3/4 of the U.S. market in a one-day drive. So our singular focus right now is to build the largest indoor sustainable produce hub, put it in Central Appalachia, and grow fruits and vegetables and bring it to this half of the U.S. And we're also doing it here because we are getting wetter. I mentioned earlier how California is running out of water in much of the southwest of the U.S. Our state in 2018, we had our wettest year on record. So we are getting more rainfall while much of the rest of the U.S. is getting less rainfall. And that's the reason why we're able to run our facility completely on recycled rainwater. And I'll leave it with this. When people ask me, what is AppHarvest? I say, you know, we're almost a water company. A fruit or vegetable is 95-96% water with an organic container and some nutrients. So being in a region that is rich in rainfall is a place where we're going to be able to build these facilities and operate for the next 10 or 20 years. So hopefully many of your listeners might be chefs or restaurant owners along the East Coast, Midwest, or Southeast of the U.S. And hopefully they reach out and we'll send them a good box of tomatoes that they can start serving at their restaurants once everything gets back opened here after COVID.
Excellent. Well, look, I look forward to seeing the finished, not greenhouse, the controlled growing environment. And good luck. And I look forward to catching up and finding out how it's all going in the future as well. So thank you very much, Jonathan Webb, founder and CEO of AppHarvest. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to gut microbiome analysis. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. Thank you from me, and thank you, Jonathan Webb. To find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.